taking a stand for people's greatness more than they'll stand for their limitation became a little bit more of what I was known for, that I was there to add value, to help them.
What's another principle that maybe the rest of us could take away from how you did it?
The big thing is, I think that you've got to be willing to fail. In the book, I have an adaptive learning model where we learn, we implement, we fail, we relearn a new way. And that's what brings us all to success. I mean, you're a great entrepreneur. Look at all the things that you've done. And as an entrepreneur, we've got to be able to face fear every single day and say, I'm just going to do it. And if I fail, I'll figure it out. That pig-headed determination.
Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. On this episode, we get to have Diana Kokoska. Diana, thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So you have an exciting background. We're definitely going to be talking about your new book and everything you're doing today and a lot about your time as CEO at Keller Williams Maps. I'm a Keller Williams fan. We had Jay Papasan on to talk about writing The One Thing with Gary Keller. A couple weeks ago, I had Joe Williams on. And so when it came through of like, you know, the woman who took them from losing $1 million to doing $500 million a year at Maps, I was pretty excited. So let's talk about, you know, helping 175,000 people. For people who don't know what Maps is, can you explain it?
Well, it's Mega Achievement Productivity Systems, and it was put into play by Gary Keller many years ago in regards to consulting agents and helping them systematize their business a little bit more. And when I came in, I said, oh, you hire a consultant when your business is going bad. You hire a coach when you want to get better. So we changed it from consulting to coaching. We added events to it. We started doing training with the coaching. A lot of people think those are the same thing, and they're not. And things just started happening. You know the drill, Jess. You have to lead generate a lot, because at first, nobody wanted to use Maps. They didn't like it. It had a bad name, whatever. But we turned it around, and that's what counts, right?
Yeah, totally. Can you talk about, let's just start with some success stories. Like, why these people were so excited to become a client when you're helping somebody who was, you know, doing 400,000 a year, they start doing 4 million a year, or, you know, they had, 100 closings, now they have 4,000 closings in a year. Can you talk about some of these success stories?
Well, we did have a lot of success stories. I remember Gina Rott was one of them when you said from 400,000 to 4 million. I literally was at an award banquet and he won the award with 400,000. Now, this was at the time when nobody wanted to use Maps. They had two other coaches or coaching companies, Craig Proctor and Johnny Johnson, and Keller Williams really liked them. Mary Tennant, Mark Willis, they were the CEO and president, and they both used Johnny Johnson in their offices. So I had to really find a way to get people to like us. And I probably started off a little bit incorrect, Jess. I said to Gene Arant, Gene, congratulations on being the number one agent with 400,000 in commissions. Yet I got to tell you, you are a $1 million producer, cleverly disguised as a $400,000 producer. Well, that went over like a lead balloon. And yet he said he kept thinking about that over and over. And I kept telling him, I see you as a $1 million producer. And I truly believe people grow into the conversations we create around them. And I kept creating conversations around people, always talking just a little bit better than what they were actually doing, sometimes a lot better than what they were doing, because I could see in them that they had that potential. Nobody was bringing it out of them. And taking a stand for people's greatness more than they'll stand for their limitation became a little bit more of what I was known for, that I was there to add value, to help them. And little by little, I got to tell you, Jeff, I gave 10 coaching clients free coaching for 3 months just to get it going. And I said, at the end of 3 months, if everything is going good and you like what's happening, then you got to start paying. And you got to write a testimonial for us and start telling everybody about us. And I held them to that. And that helped get it going. After I let them start paying, I took on another 10 clients for free. eventually I started just coaching coaches. I didn't coach clients one-on-one. And I got some great coaches. I mean, I was so blessed to work with such great people. We got up to 357 one-on-one coaches, 80 group coaches that were helping like 10,000 clients, and 57 Bold coaches that helped 175,000 people through Bold. So the one-on-one was my mainstay, though, with 4,900 clients every single week, hearing from MAPS and helping them grow in production.
Yeah. Well, and I know a lot of these lessons are in your new book here, Becoming More, which apparently is sold out everywhere except Amazon as we're recording today. But one of my favorite things on this show is the business media is full of somebody's opinion about how somebody grew a company. And my favorite thing is getting to hear it right from the source. Can you talk about this, like, you know, from losing $1 million to doing $500 million a year? What's another principle that maybe the rest of us could take away from how you did it?
Well, it was $500 million over the course of 13 years. Okay. And yet I appreciate you saying it that way. It made it sound so much better. I always think a story should be embellished a little bit, right? The big thing is, I think that you've got to be willing to fail. In the book, I have an adaptive learning model where we learn, we implement, we fail, we relearn a new way. And that's what brings us all to success. I mean, you're a great entrepreneur. Look at all the things that you've done. And as an entrepreneur, we've got to be able to face fear every single day and say, I'm just going to do it. And if I fail, I'll figure it out. That pig-headed determination. You know, I always told people, I didn't care about being rich. I just didn't want to be poor, right? Because when I started, I had to put my kids in a little red wagon and go door to door because I couldn't afford a babysitter. Well, I knew what that felt like. And I knew when I took over MAPS, I made a guarantee to Gary Keller that I was going to make it work. And I was not going to fail. It was one of those times when I knew failure was an option. I just wasn't going to agree to having that option, right? So I was lead generating every day. I was giving away free coaching. I was talking to whoever I could get to become a coach. Of course, I didn't want just anybody. I wanted the best that I could find. I saved one of the coaches of the five consultants that they had, and we just started building little by little and one success after another. And speaking of those successes, never talking about the company, never talking about myself, I would always promote the coaches and the clients and what they were doing. So those were the things that helped us get going. Also, the training that we did. Back in those days, nobody talked about mindset, Jess. In real estate, it was about how you did everything. Well, I was known for scripts and dialogues. I had written 19 books of real estate systems. That helped. I also had to learn about the brain because my brother and sister both had brain tumors. And I studied the brain. And so I started bringing that into the coaching world. And I said, we coach with the brain in mind, retraining how people would think about things, changing their perspective. And we know that when you change the perspective, you change the reality. Every single person out there was making up a story, and we listened to their story. The words that they used described who they were being at that time, and then taking that story and helping them construct a new story, a new way of thinking that led them to doing more and better production, a higher production than they even ever thought they could. Convincing them that every single one of us have a gift, every single one of us have the ability to make things happen. We sabotage ourselves with thoughts of mediocrity. And we have these four storytellers I talk about that live in our mind. The first one is the devious storyteller. It's the one that always tells us how bad we are, or we should have done this, or should have done that, or should have said this, or should have said that. And it keeps us up at night, even talking about like the way that maybe the boss snubbed us at work or our spouse, what they didn't do correctly. Yet it will tear us down if we allow it to. The second storyteller is just as bad. It's a flattering storyteller. It helps us believe that, oh my goodness, we're so good, that we ought to start believing our own press, right? And that we know what happens when you become egotistical. The third one, though, I hear a lot of people use. It's called the reasonable storyteller. He's the one that allows us to give excuses and reasons as to why we don't do something in our life, why it didn't work out. In essence, we don't take responsibility for what we do. The fourth one, though, is the one that we help people with, and that's the empowering storyteller, the one that allows us to realize that we are great. We just have to bring that greatness out, that we are going to fail, and it's okay if we fall down, we can get back up. It's the one that helps us persist. It's the one that I just say it's pig-headed determination to keep going and have the grit that it takes, whatever it takes, to make it work. That's what we help people with.
Because I've spent some time in the, management consulting world and leadership training and coaching and consulting world, I think a question I have is, for folks who are scaling in that world, how do you keep the quality up? I mean, when you start having hundreds of coaches working for you, and obviously some are going to be better than others, you as the leader, what kind of things did you do to ensure the quality when you can't be there? And I mean, there's now hundreds of people delivering for you. And yet that customer's experience is like, it's the new report card every single time it gets delivered, right?
It's every week you get a new report card. Absolutely. And it was a constant training of the coaches. We had weekly training calls. I did coaching skills camp, had great coaches that helped train the coaches as well. We would have them record calls. We'd listen to the calls. We had a customer service division that would call the clients and ask them how things were going. And of course, Jess, we had calls that they bombed. And boy, we got to hear about it. We were changing coaches. The biggest thing was getting the coaches to understand, not to take it personally, that this is the way that things happen. Sometimes you're going to just lose clients. But the main thing is, I believe that every client is creative, resourceful, and whole. I believe that that client, every single session should come from them, their issues, and that we coach to the whole person, their personal life and their business life, because they both influence one another. And the fourth thing is that we become a partner with them. And when a coach didn't understand the numbers that of the client that they were working with, we had to take that client away because they were not being a partner with them. And instilling the culture and into the responsibility into those coaches that if that client's going down, that's your report card. That's you. You're not helping your partner become as great as they need to be. And so it was about care and candor. And as you know, a relationship that's all about care, well, that is just a dysfunctional relationship. And a relationship that is all candor, well, that's a distant relationship. You need both of them to get results. But yet, how do you do that? How do you give care and candor? And one of the things that I found that a lot of people had been taught, and they kind of argued with me because they said, no, this is straight from the Bible. It says you say something good about somebody, then you say what needs to be corrected, then you say something good. And I go, no, because when you say something good and then you say something bad, whenever you say something good, you've trained their brain to wait for what is bad and they'll never hear what is good. And what it is, I know what they were saying. Paul talked about it in the Bible, if you want to go there. He said that you tell people that they have this opportunity, that they have an opportunity to be great. You bring up the ways that they can be great, and then you go into what they can do to be greater, right? You don't give them a compliment and then chop them down and then give them another compliment. In Australia, they call that the crap-filled lolly, right? something sweet, then something bad, then something sweet, right? So you think you're in the lollipop and you get something a little bad on the inside. So anyway, it was always, you had to be on top of it, on top of your game. And every coaching call One time I said to the coaches, how do you prepare for a call? And yes, they said the things like most people would. Oh, I look at the file. I review the numbers. I see what they did last week. I look at what their homework was so I can check on it. And then Tony DiCello, who happens to be my husband and was a coach for us, he said something that stopped everybody in their track. He said, I prepare to listen. And that's how he prepared for every call. You know what that call's going to do. You know where it's going after they say hello. And by the way they say hello, you know if it's going to be a call that you're moving forward fast as all get out, or it's going to be a call where maybe you pick up some pieces that have fallen on the ground. You got to be prepared. I believe that there are certain qualities that a coach has and they can learn them. Those values, and I was big on values. I wanted to know, what are your values? Everyone came in, they got value cards. And the value cards, they would go through very quickly. And I would generally say, take out faith and family, because most people have those two values. Put those off to the side, take all the other cards, and pick out your five top ones. Well, we went to 10 first and then to five, because it's a little challenging when you got 50 cards, right? One, I wanted to see how quickly they knew their values. And secondly, I wanted to see what they were. There are certain values you need as a coach. You can learn them. Are you willing to learn? So that's where it all started, and it kept going from there.
Yeah. I'm interested. Well, I've got a whole bunch of questions, but let's start with this one. You know, you went from having a small team to a national team helping people all over. What was one of the challenges you didn't anticipate as you, end up doing $500 million in volume?
In 2009, the real estate market, 2008, 9, 10, you probably remember, it was devastating. Realtors were dropping out of the business like flies. And Mary Tennant called me, and she was the president at Keller Williams. And she said, Diana, I want you to write a training program. And you can call it whatever you want. You can do whatever you think needs to be done. We'll do a test pilot on it and let me know what you come up with. So I went back and I came up with BOLD, Business Objective, A Life by Design. And the course had a lot of mindset in it, a lot about restructuring your story. It had scripts, dialogues, business aspects, how to take care of money, how to think about money, the energy, because I was a physics and math major, so I brought in a lot of energy. It was a fun time. And we put people into teams. It was a 7-week program. And it was interesting because in those 7 weeks, when it was challenging, they were still doing on average 14.7 transactions per agent. Now, the interesting part, you said, what didn't I anticipate? Everything in real estate, training-wise, was free back then. 2009, nobody was charging for training. They just wanted to help those realtors through whatever they were going through. And I came along and said, I'm going to charge you $799. And people go, what? What are you doing? I got a lot of pushback. I was called a lot of names other than Diana, I have to tell you. And yet, I knew that if people had skin in the game, they would take it serious. One lady actually came up to me. We were at a John Maxwell program, and she comes up to me and says, Diana, you're never going to believe it. I would not be standing here today if it wasn't for you. And I go, no, you did everything yourself. And she goes, no, you wouldn't let me into BOLD free. It was $799. I sold my treadmill to be able to come to BOLD. And she said, that's when my business took off. And now I'm here at an event that costs $16,000 and I'm paying for it and loving every bit of it, right? She goes, we could have never done things like that without BOLD. And I said, yes, I created the words. I created the environment, but you did the job. And so I think a lot of times people don't see how powerful their mind really is. They think it's all about doing. When in essence, they say, man, if I can do what that person does, I could have what they have. Yeah, that's how a villain talks. if I could have, I could have what they have if I did what they did. I mean, if I had their money, I can do a lot of things. No, 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 that isn't right either. It's you've got to be like them to do what they do, to have what they have. And once we get that straight and we work on ourselves to become the very best that we can be, everything else starts falling into place. So it was a paradigm shift. It was getting their perspective to look at things a different way than they had ever looked at them before in real estate. The mindset was the key, that who they were being was the key. We had people take that class that were actually, there was one lady that was homeless that was going to a gas station to actually wash up in the morning in their restroom. I had no idea. And she would come in and she would make the calls and she would do everything that we told them to do. And literally within a year, she had bought a house for her family. I mean, it just, stories like that just kept me going because they were the true inspiration.
I want to talk about helping people become the best version of themselves, because I hear your stories about resilience, you know, trying to get into the real estate business and, you know, all these agencies had one woman, they wouldn't hire another one. They all wanted you to just be a secretary, right? And then you get the job and you couldn't afford a babysitter. So you're like pulling your kids on a red wagon and the average agent's selling 5 homes a year and you sell 104 your first year, right? And it's just like, both of my daughters want to be entrepreneurs. And so I love hearing these stories about like how things are doesn't have to determine how things are going to be. Or like you talk about your property management company, getting to have 72 properties and then finding out that your employee had embezzled the money and you're broke and had all these problems. And instead of crying about it, you pull up your socks and like go back to sales and like determine your own future. And I guess my question is, I can see that within you. So I'm not that surprised you end up doing $500 million of business over these years. My question is how you help others develop that.
I believe that people grow into the conversations you create around them. So creating conversations, not letting them get down on themselves, taking that stand for their greatness. There were people that I called on the way home every single night saying, you can do this. You are not giving in. There is no way. Now, I want you to say these affirmations. Say them with me. I actually made an affirmation CD that people could put in their cars and listen to them on the way to work or wherever they were going. The greatest part is a lot of them listened to them on the way to school as they were taking their kids to school. And the kids started saying the affirmations. So they were actually training those kids' brains into a way of thinking that they were able to do things. They did have what it took, as long as they put forward the effort. So we would go through, what's the toll booth that you've got to go through? Because every dream has a price. What's it going to cost you? Are you willing to pay that price? And more importantly, what are you willing to do if you don't do it? For example, let's say that, well, one person wanted to take their kids to Hawaii on a vacation. So they had to look up how much it was. We broke down what they would have to do, right down to how many calls they would have to make. Now, remember, this is back in the day when social media wasn't that big of a deal, right? And now we do a lot with social media. Yet we would say, if you don't do that every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you've got to work on Saturday, or you've got to miss the kids' soccer game, or we would put the pain in there as well. Because when the pain is greater, whichever is the greater is going to win. If picking up the phone is too big of a pain, you're going to go do something else. But when the pain of having no money or having to tell your kids that you're a failure, right, that becomes strong enough, then the pain of picking up the phone is nothing. So we use pleasure and pain a lot when we were in the coaching and getting people to see that they could do it. And sometimes it just flat out took saying, I'm not taking that from you. Now get up and do something because you can do it. And I have a way of talking that way to people that nobody ever hit me, yet they did thank me later. A lot of them said, I didn't like you at first. That I said, well, that's kind of what a coach does. The Dallas Cowboy coach said it best. He said that a coach has you see what you don't want to see, tells you what you don't want to hear, makes you do what you don't want to do so you can become the person you always wanted to be. I didn't care if people liked me. I did want them to respect me. What I did care about is to make them as successful as they chose to be. But it was always their choice, and that's what I reminded them of. So I don't know if that helps you or not, Jess, but a lot of it was I just believed in him so strongly, I wasn't going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons I like Gary Keller so much. You know, I love any self-made billionaire who then uses their money to do good.
That's right.
But yes. I listened to part of that book, The One Thing, constantly. I was listening to it this morning. And like, it's the reason I had his co-author, Jay Papasan, on the show and Joe Williams to talk about, you know, how did they grow to the, you know, largest real estate franchise in the country, almost 200,000 agents or whatever it is. And when I saw your, you know, your name come through from your PR people, I was like, oh yeah, let's for sure have her. I'm like, but this concept of like getting honest and pulling things back to like what really matters. And I think there's a reason that so many top CEOs have a background in sales. And this idea of the salesperson of like, I don't know about you, I can always make up an excuse. Like salespeople are amazing at coming up with excuses, right? And like when you're a founder CEO, like when you're a founder of a startup, you know, and there is no boss, you can come up with a lot of excuses. When you're the CEO and you are the boss, you can come up with excuses. Like there, you have to be able to rein yourself in. You have to be able to get yourself to do what you think you should do instead of what you feel like doing. And so like, I love hearing what you're saying because, you know, I got my first sales job when I was 15. And I feel like, you know, for the last 28 years, I've always just been a sales guy. Even when I'm CEO of my own investment fund, I'm just top sales guy at the company, you know? And there's like, my business partners can put pressure on me or something, but they can't, like, I don't have a boss. Nobody can yell at me, really. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have to get myself to do it. And so I've read like, you know, Jeb Blau, Fanatical Prospecting, to be like, hardcore, this is your fault, Jess, get on it. But like Gary Keller, you know, the one thing of like, what's the one thing that'll make everything else easier or relevant? You know, and it's like, right. Oh yeah, I have 60 things on my to-dos list, but what really matters? And I've listened to other podcasts of yours. I've read a bunch of your stuff. And like your willingness to harp on prospecting and lead gen and get out there and, you know, do the one thing that makes everything else possible. Like no wonder your people were successful.
Well, I appreciate that. They did the work and I was relentless in being on top of it, I guess. I don't know. No one succeeds alone. It takes all of us working together, collaborative and all of that. And I think it's because like when my kids were little, like they wanted to eat, I had to provide for them, right? So it wasn't an option to not work. What was I going to say? You can't eat tonight. And a lot of people, though, they don't believe in themselves. That's the biggest thing I saw. They didn't believe that if they picked up the phone, anybody wanted to talk with them. So you had to approach it a different way. One lady, I said, look, do you like people? And she said, well, yeah, I love people. I said, well, let's play that there's an 85-year-old woman out there and she needs to sell her home. She's going into a nursing home. And an agent comes along who doesn't care about her at all. And he takes her for a ride that loses a lot of money that she could have saved through taxes. He doesn't get her the highest price. How would you feel about that? And she'd say, well, I didn't like that realtor at all. And I go, well, that realtor got that deal because you weren't willing to pick up the phone. So now how do you feel about yourself? And she goes, well, no, I want to help people like that. And I said, well, then pick up the doggone phone and help people. Because don't tell me you want to help people and you're not willing to pick up the phone and help them. And you're going to let them at a weak moment go with a weak agent. That's not caring about people. And so as you speak like that to people, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, sometimes you just need to let them know, come on. Let's think about this differently. And you catch them somewhere to where it touches their heart. And once you touch their heart, man, it's like tapping a thoroughbred. They're going to run forever. And you can beat that whatever out of a donkey and it won't move, right? So when you touch their heart, though, I truly believe people become a thoroughbred.
No, listen, I'm such a coaching fan. I was a 28-year-old CEO of my own little private investment fund, right? We'd raise like, I led the team. We had like $27 million and I thought I was a big deal, right? Okay. And like, I worked too much and I was like ruining my marriage. Okay. And so my mentor from high school had kind of wrecked his marriage and said, I got this coach. And she helped me like spot my own blind spots and put my marriage back together. So I called that company and I said, can I get not just a coach, can I get his coach? And Nancy Smith, I got on a call every week with her and she like called me on my crap. And she just like, I would say, well, things went pretty well, but then this happened, and this happened. And she'd say things like, I don't know, Jess, I just don't believe you. She's like, because I would like, you know, I'm like lawyering about how I, you know, I'm this, you know, like it's all her fault. And like, if you met my wife, you would just laugh. She's got to be one of the nicest people on earth. Okay. But I had like done enough of a hot potato game to get her to be less than the best version of herself. Okay. And no kidding. Like 3 months later, our marriage went back to how it was 10 years earlier when we first got married. And it was like a miracle cure. Right. And so then I thought, well, geez, if it's like this to be married to me, imagine what it's like to work for me. So I kept my coach and it was on me as, you know, as the CEO of the fund. And like all of a sudden, like employees started coming to me for like personal advice, like people who would have avoided that kind of a conversation with me, and like things changed. So I started doing it for other CEOs and stuff. Right. And so in the last dozen years, I've done maybe like you've done more than me, but I've done maybe 2,000 or 3,000 hours of CEO coaching and coaching Delta Force Commandos and other special ops and pro athletes. And then I done free coaching for like trafficking survivors and women who've been abused by their husbands and stuff. And then I get my own coaches. Like right now I have two coaches, both with like, they're CEOs with, you know, companies many, many times bigger than mine. And it's just like so awesome to have somebody who cares about my problem, but doesn't have a dog in the fight. You know, like they don't need me to come up with any answer except the answer that's right for me. And I just think it's magic.
Well, first of all, congratulations on all you've done, because one, you were willing to listen. You have a growth mindset. That was one of the most challenging things when you had a client with a fixed mindset that already thought they knew everything and you would call them on it. And sometimes it would work and sometimes it took many, many times to get it to work. Sometimes they'd get upset and wouldn't talk to you for a while. It's very interesting, though. Here's one of the things you brought up about relationships. 53% of the people right now in sales end up getting a divorce. And that's sad to me. It doesn't have to be that way. We have right now 96% of CEOs, according to Forbes, they are stressed out and in burnout. 62% are literally stating that the stress is causing problems with their relationships, with their family and their friends. And you brought up a couple of very good things. In fact, I think a lot of CEOs right now need to be asking the people that work with them, what's it like to be on the other side of me? You might be real surprised what they're getting. My husband and I, we have a meeting every now and then, and the two questions that we ask, which are fun at first, like, what did I do this week that you hope I never stop doing? Oh, that's great, because you get to hear all the good things that you did, right? Then comes the most challenging question. What did I do this week that you hope I'll never do again? And the first thing you want to do, Jess, is you want to jump in and have an excuse as to why you did it, right? Oh, no, you don't understand. I had to do that because, and then you realize what you're doing and you go, got it. Okay. What did you feel when I did that, right? And do you want to hear what was going on in my mind, or should we just drop it? Sometimes you just drop it. But I think you need to have those types of discussions. Because if we're not willing to look in the mirror, our life isn't going to change. And the name of the book, Becoming More, You Can't Get to Better Until You Get to Different, is true. You've got to do something different to get better. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results, because Einstein says that's insanity, right?
Can you tell us one of your favorite stories from the book?
Oh, my word. There's so
many of them. Or just a principle
from
the book. I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, no, that's okay. I love stories because each chapter actually kind of starts with a story. And there's so many in there because there's 20 chapters. But one of the stories that is written in there is to be careful who you listen to in your life. Be careful who you hang out with, right? And it comes from Zig Ziglar. My dad sold tickets to the American Motivational Society. And so Zig Ziglar was at our home many times. And I remember one time him talking about he was taking a trip and he was lost. And he had to get to Memphis. And he stops at this service station and he gets out. And this guy is so explicit. He tells him exactly how to get there. He said, "You're only 45 minutes away." And he actually draws in this little map. And boy, Zig, he gets back in his car. He's all excited. And he drives and he follows that map, those instructions to the T. And he finds out that he's not anywhere close to where he's supposed to be. In fact, he's now another 45 minutes away from Memphis. The guy, he meant well. He thought he knew. He gave him directions. And he said, "Diana, you got to learn. Don't listen to people. Even if they sound like they know it all and you think they know it all," he said, "you do a little bit of investigation. Because there's a lot of people out there that brag about all the money they're making. And then you look at their bottom line and you're going, wait, you're working that hard to net that much money? You got to be kidding. Don't listen to them," right? So that advice really helped me because, I mean, like Gary Keller, John Maxwell, I started listening to people. And when I met John Maxwell, I read his book, actually. And I went, "I got to meet this guy." Found out that he was speaking in Dallas. This was like 25 years ago. And off to Dallas I went. And when we went to sign books, and he, of course, John says, "I'm John and I'm your friend," right? And so he says, "What's your name?" I said, "Diana," but stop. First of all, it's with two N's. And I put my hand over the book and I said, "Look at me. You're John and you're my friend." And he goes, "Right." And I said, "And I'm Diana and I will become your friend." "Okay, now it's two N's. Go ahead and sign the book." And he started laughing because he said nobody had ever done that to him. So every time I went somewhere that he spoke, I would buy another book and do the exact same thing. "Hey, remember, I'm Diana and I will become your friend." And pretty soon he says, "I just need to give you my phone number so we can become really good friends." And we have. And he's a great, great guy. We've traveled as far as with the team to go into countries, like I was telling you earlier, to teach values to kids. And it's amazing what will happen when you get people to actually understand values and how important they are in our life.
Okay, first, because my mentor, who's still, you know, my business partner now, going back 22 years, he got me to read John Maxwell books starting back then. I want to know, which was your first John Maxwell book?
21 Laws, and then Developing the Leader Within. And then I took the class Developing the Leader Within, and then took the class on Developing the Leaders Around You. And then it was just one book after another. And I think his latest book is just great, the one on communication, the 16 Laws. And he really gets in and talks about some of the things that he went through. And I think that's what makes a book come alive, is when you're willing to put a little bit of yourself out there. In my book on beliefs, I talk about going to Tony Robbins, that I'm going to walk on hot coals, right? And some of the things that I'm going through and what's happening. Am I going to have fear overtake my faith, or am I going to allow faith to be bigger than my fear? And I talk about how faith and belief, they're not the same things, that we have to decide, and how we can decide, and how we can train our brain to choose faith over fear. Get rid of the fear. You know, some of the things that are really interesting is that emotions and feelings are not the same. That you can't even have a feeling until you put a meaning to that emotion. And let's take anger, for example. If you're angry over something, you can't remain angry. And once you let whoever you're angry at go, or whatever you're angry about go, unless you direct that anger at someone or something, the brain won't allow you to be angry. And just those little teeny tiny hints that are all through this book of things that we can do that allow us to have a great life, because that's really the life we're supposed to have. I say life's an illusion. Pick a good one, right?
Here's another one that I can tell you practice what you preach, because I get, you know, I'm going through your Instagram, I'm listening to your other podcasts, and I'm hearing who you spend time with. Why do you choose to spend time with Dan Sullivan and Strategic Coach?
Well, Strategic Coach has a lot of great models. I believe that models are easy to follow. And when you follow the model, it can actually be your solution to whatever situation you're in. Strategic Coach has been with so many people, with CEOs, business owners, small business owners, a multitude of different types of businesses. And those models and principles, they work. So yes, I am in Strategic Coach. I always believe that we should have a personal growth plan. It was on my personal growth plan many, many years ago, only you had to go in person to do it. He was always having those events when I had my own events going. And being a CEO, you don't walk away from your own event and say, hey, I got to go see Dan Sullivan. Yet once he started doing that on Zoom, it's amazing how many people that I've been able to meet and hear about what they're doing and the situations. You know what's interesting, Jess? Pretty much we all have the same situations happening in our lives. We're on a roller coaster ride. The question is, are you, when you're taking that deep dive, are you hanging on for dear life, or are you throwing your hands up in the air going, wee, right? I want to help people throw their hands up in the air and go, wee, we're on a great ride. Let's ride it to the end, right? And go as fast as we can.
Well, I want to ask you about this. When you have those situations that you really don't feel like doing what you think you should do, what do you tell yourself? How do you get yourself to do it?
It's in my book, I call it priority switch. Priority switch is when you make the pain of not doing it greater than the pain of doing it. And so I just play games with my mind. Yeah, there's a lot of times I don't want to do things. And so I just go like, what would my kids think if I didn't do that? What if I had to actually tell them, hey, I laid in bed all day because I didn't feel like doing anything. You weren't worth getting out of bed for. Come on. Those kind of things. You just play games with your mind and you do the priority switch. It'll work every time.
That's great. You know, I really admire the way that you've like taken life by the horns and just gone after it. And when people weren't giving you permission, you didn't really care. You just did it yourself. What would be your advice for my two daughters who are getting ready to embark on their entrepreneurial lives?
Don't ask for the rules. Ask what the fine will be.
I love that advice. I'm totally going home and telling them that tonight.
I would say, actually, I got that from John Maxwell, but I love it. It just makes it, it's exactly who I am. Just don't tell me the rules. Tell me the fine. I'll decide if I want to keep the rules or not. I would ask your daughters every night. So what did you fail at today? What did you learn from it? Because I think a lot of people, they're always telling their kids how great they are at something, or they talk about the successes they had. But I think when people actually realize that it's okay to fail, and I think it was Sarah Blakely that said her dad did that all the time. He would say, what did you fail at today? And so she says, I was never afraid to fail because I knew he loved me unconditionally when I failed, and he knew that he would help me through it. And I think that's important because we all want to look good and be right. Our brains want us to look good. In fact, when we make up a story, our reticular activating system of our brain takes that in. And that's our Google search engine. I call it a RAS for short. But it's like when you type things into Google, you don't get everything that's on the internet. You just get those things to come up in blue that are exactly what you asked for. So here the RAS is, and it says, your wish is my command. You tell it, hey, in real estate, there's no listings to be found. And it'll say, great, I'll make certain you'll never find a listing because that's what you want. That's the story you want to live. And we predict our future. When we're allowed to say it's okay to fail and people accept us and tell us, just put forward a little bit more effort, we'll help those people to become growth oriented. One of the things I found that's really important about kids is that a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. Let's say a kid gets an A on a math test, right? And to put a fixed mindset in your kid, you would say something like, oh my goodness, I'm so proud of you. You got an A in math. I knew you could do it. You're good at math. In fact, you are so good at math. You're better than all the other kids. Math is your strong point. To put a growth mindset into your child, you would say, an A in math? Oh my goodness, I'm so proud of you. And it's that effort that you put forward. You put that much effort forward in anything you do, you're going to be a success. Because see, one way it says there's only so many people that are good at math. That's fixed. You either have it or you don't. When you have a growth mindset, it's all about the effort you put forward and that you can be as good as you desire to be. I'd love every parent to start talking about effort versus greatness, right?
Okay, besides going to Amazon and ordering their own copy of Becoming More, what's the website? Is it the becomingmorebook.com?
That is correct, yes. And if they want to learn about some of the events that we're having, like raising money for kids, and you can see the nonprofit and everything that John Maxwell will be there with me. We're doing in Nashville on March 25th and 26th. Go to moretraining.com.
That's great. Maybe to finish off, you've accomplished what so many other people haven't. What do you think is different about you?
I would say what sets me apart is my personal growth. I am in the front row taking notes, just like John Maxwell wrote my foreword. And he even brought it up. He says, she's always in the front row taking notes. And I want to learn. I desire to learn. It's the one thing that nobody could ever take away from me, Jess. You know, I've had ups and downs in my life, as we all do. That's what life is, right? Yet, the one thing I knew no one could ever take from me is my knowledge. And so I read, I devour books, I would go to bed at night with a flashlight and read under the covers if I could. I mean, I just want to know more. And the more I know, the more I realize I don't know. And that's what keeps me going. That's what sets me apart, is personal development.
Listen, this has been so fun. Thank you for making time to do this.
Thank you so much. I do want to leave them with one thought, because your business grows to the extent that you do. And when you think about it, when your business grows to the extent that you do, that's what kept me going, because I had to grow. I had to be ahead of the coaches. I mean, if you're going to lead somebody, you better be out in front, right? And you better look back and find somebody that's following. Otherwise, you're just out taking a hike.
I love that. I love that. And I guess I love when I get to hear truth from different high achievers who don't know each other. 2 weeks ago, we had Jonathan Siddharth on here. Built a billion-dollar artificial intelligence company. And that's what he said. He's like, I think the key is for me to get 2 to 3 years ahead of the company at all times so that I'm actually leading. And, you know, couldn't come from a different background. You grew up in India, but you guys have both accomplished so much. And so I love hearing the similarity in principles from different worlds. And truth is truth, right?
Right. As a CEO, personal growth is not an option. It's a necessity.
That's great. I think that's a great place to end. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you so much, Jess. It's been a pleasure.
Bye, everyone.